Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Dylan Von Wagner. He's the frontman of the New York City-based group Imaginary People, who released their third album, Alibi, on September 12th. Written during a period that Von Wagner describes as a cultural civil war, the record traverses the distance between the universal and the singular. Von Wagner recently spoke about the making of Alibi, his views on the music business, both past and future, and what it's like for him as he waits for a new album to be released. We started our conversation, more or less, discussing the current state of music festivals. That's Dylan Von Wagner of Imaginary People on Into Music, coming up now. I also kind of wonder if we haven't reached peak festival, you know. I feel like that concept.
You mean small festivals or like Coachella kind of level?
Yeah, like Coachella kind of level.
Yeah, I think you need the acts to be able to headline them. You know, I am friendly with some people higher up, big agents, and you know they'll say, you know, a lot of it has to do, as you know, with headliners. And if you have a lot of these festivals, they need, you know, a lot of the people come because of the band that's at the top of the bill. So I think that has a lot to do with it. I definitely think there's less bands out there, as you know of. I mean, I go to any, you know, I look on any news site or I look on Pitchfork. I mean it's probably like 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 of the artists or solo artists and not in bands, I would assume. I don't know if that's right, but it seems like it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say a dying breed, but it's just less of it. I think it's easier to make music by your, I think it's technology probably has a lot to do with it. You can make music by yourself a lot easier. You can do everything by yourself now. I think you got to be delusional. I'm still delusional. It's the only way to do it. Even my friends in show business, they're all, the ones that are successful, they're like, fuck, you know, got me, you know, it's just as delusional as day one, you know.
It's that thing, right? I use this analogy a lot where it's kind of like, you know how sometimes you're swimming and you can kind of see land, and then at some point maybe you can't, and then you're like, what am I gonna do? And that's how I always think about like life and the arts. It's like at some point you just lose sight of land and that's it.
Yeah, and it's not a meritocracy too, you know. My first band, Linfinity, I remember I think a lot of that, there were so many bands. It was just like 2008, 2009, and there were so many bands, and a lot of it had to do with me, a booking agent at Mercury Lounge, giving me opening slots for big bands that were coming through, and like War on Drugs and School of Seven Bells and all these bands. And guess who's at those shows? The whole music industry. And then, you know, you do a bunch of those, sooner or later people are like, who are you? And then a bunch of stuff starts to happen. I mean, that's really how it, I don't think we were particularly better than anybody else. I just think right place, right time. Yes, we worked hard. We had some decent tunes, but like, you know, a lot of it is luck. I think the meritocracy element is like, if you do get in and you do get like the ride, you make 5 or 6 records over 10 years, then that's, you know, something that you can have 2 hands on the wheel about. But getting into the business and making a living, fuck do I know.
Do you remember the first time like you were able to like pay rent from music?
It was only for like 2 years I was able to make enough money to like kind of pay bills. There were some checks from like licensing and stuff that, not to get too in the weeds, but years ago, music licensing and publishing paid a lot more. So there was more cable television, and cable television had a lot more viewers. And hence, if you got your song into something on TV, it would pay a lot more. And if you got something in a commercial, would pay a lot more. And now, you know, if you get a show, like my song was on a show on Netflix, and you barely, I think it was like $10,000, you know, And of that, you're getting four or five or six of it. I forget what it was. So like, yeah, there's little bits and pieces you can sometimes get, but that's nothing. Even if I was the biggest band in the world, you can't count on music licensing or publishing or anything. The only thing you could probably count on is fans, people streaming your music and people showing up at your shows. The other stuff that happens that's outside of that is just pure luck. You know, I have a friend that owns works at a publishing company and owns actually the publishing company. And he has big bands that get nothing, and he has small bands that get a lot. So again, hands are up. I don't know. It's the fuck out of. Oh, I can't swear, right?
Yeah,
No,
you can.
I can swear? Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah. Keep swearing.
Okay.
yeah, that's interesting. I've heard too, like for actors, like residuals now are like because of streaming, that has changed too, you
Well,
know?
that's what the strike was all about. I don't know the details of what they're getting, but yeah, before the strike, yeah, there just wasn't the money to be made from residuals. I'll give you an idea. I can give you a really interesting one. It's very rare, but one of our friends, a woman, happens to be a professional stunt woman. And when I say professional stunt, I mean like she makes her living from being a stunt woman. And like she's been in so many fucking shows and movies and like the stand-in for some lead, I'm not going to tell you who, like some lead character in a 10 episode arc of an HBO show and all that stuff back in the day, the residual checks from that were just, it's insane. And when streaming came along, yeah, a lot of that went away. And so I think now with the new agreement, they'll be getting more money. Again, I don't know. I'm not in the business, so I don't know the root of it. But yeah, that was a big issue. It's the same with publishing. Publishing back in the day, I know we're getting in the weeds of the music business, but back in the day with mechanical royalties, and to explain that as simple as possible, when you put out a CD or a vinyl and you had 10 songs on it, the label had to, as I remember it, had to pay 7 cents a song to your publishing company to put that record out. So, you sell a million copies, you got 700 grand in just mechanical royalties. So there was all this, money that was out there that for physical product that just doesn't exist anymore. And then labels stopped paying mechanicals. There's all that kind of stuff. And the only residuals left for like songwriters is if you're at the top 1% and you're still played on the radio. And even if you're streamed a lot, you really don't get a lot of money. I know big songwriters that have songs that have 2 billion plays, and they're one of like three songwriters. I'm not going to tell you the amounts, but it's not a lot of money. So it's just, it's you could live a little bit off of it, but it's not that crazy money. Like the stories you heard about radio, like I've talked to people back in the day of what, people like Elton John used to make a year off publishing, just because people forget, like back in the day, like if you were Led Zeppelin, your song is playing in, Uzbekistan, Israel, Bulgaria, Italy, all over the world constantly. And every year all that money comes back, and yeah, and you get your piece, but that doesn't exist anymore. So now that we're talking about the business, I frankly think at this point, as an artist, you're basically autonomous. You have to do it all yourself. And if you do find a label partner or somebody that can give you a little bit of a cash injection, I'm sure that's great. I think it really works for the pop and more of the top for the major label system, where they can really get you out there in a big way. I think that's for a different kind of music, but at least for the band, I think you're on your own, and eventually you can get some help, but I think basically you're on your own. It's the days of like, putting music out and then you're getting a big check and all that stuff. That's long gone. It's all up to you, which, once you realize that, you know what you're up for and you change. It's a completely different system than it was 15 years ago, where literally you and I could be in a band. We put a song out and Pitchfork and Stereo got Pitchfork makes it a best new music. And then 4AD signs you like 2 days later. That's the way it used to be back in the day. I think there's an element of that now, but I think, yeah, you're basically on your own. And honestly, you just keep putting music out until somebody cares. You there's just no rhyme or reason to it. There's lots of bands, even now, that are huge, that some put out their first record and they become huge, and some put out four records and their fifth record is what makes them some money at. And then they become a touring artist and they, I don't, there's no rhyme or reason to it to me. I see people that are huge that are, I don't get it. And then I see people that are small and they're amazing. Yeah. Got me. I wish I could explain the voodoo, my friend. Voodoo.
Well, and I promise we'll get to you more specifically here in a second, but the other phenomenon I've seen too is like the bands that are some of these legacy bands that are bigger now than when they were in their first iteration. It's like they break up, and 7 years after they've broken up, there's a new generation that finds them
Yeah. And then
the
they tore it. Yeah. Yeah.
And the original fans are like the, they're the people who are booking festivals and websites and things like that. So, but that's a really weird dynamic, when it takes like you got to break up for 7 years before somebody pays attention.
There's a lot of bands even back in the day that broke up and then they got big, but yeah, again, yeah, no rhyme or reason. I think, yeah, I've seen a lot of bands. They haven't put out a record in 8 years, but there's like that one record that just keeps seeping through. I don't know if it's the algorithm or whatever. I will say that, like, I'm not gonna name names, but there's a couple artists, one of which I've worked with. Like, there's music on, Spotify that nobody knows about that is world class that just doesn't have any muscle behind it. But I do think some of these bands that have been out there and there's a footprint of them on the internet. Yeah, I think young people, when I was young, I was listening to old bands just like I was listening to bands that were from the 70s and 60s. That was this in the, yeah, I mean, it, the new, yeah, there were new bands around, but a lot of the classic rock stuff, like all that stuff. And now, even when I talk to younger people that are 20, 22, like they'll be listening to the same thing I am, and I'm shocked, but they'll also be listening to contemporary stuff. I really, it's the same old thing. I was talking to a girl the other day and she was listening to Mazzy Star. She's like 21. I'm like, really? You know Mazzy Star? She's like, yeah, it's amazing. I was like, oh, it's fuck. So you don't, yeah, I think it's the same recycling thing. I do think you need, I think when, at least when I was growing up, radio, you need a system to get those old bands out there. And I think a lot of it had to do with radio, or I would have never heard of these bands. I think radio was the big, wherever you went, U2 was on, or Led Zeppelin, or whatever it was, The Doors, any of the 80s bands, all that kind of stuff. Now it's Spotify is the radio. And it's, I don't even know if you want to call it an algorithm, but I think anybody that listens to it a lot gets fed similar stuff to what they're listening to. And that's their radio. And I think if your music or my music gets into some algorithm, maybe one particular song will get into the zeitgeist. I don't really know. It's not, it's, I can wrap my brain around being working for, like, if you're my record company executive and you're like, we're going to get you on the radio and like, you can literally manifest things that are with guaranteed results. That's something you can wrap your brain around. But like the internet and like the way music gets out there now and social media, there's no real, like, you back in the day, I felt like you could pay for it and get results. Now you can pay for a little bit, but you can't guarantee results. Doesn't matter how good a music video or even how good a song you have. But I do think if you're with a label or somebody, yeah, that you have a leg up. With getting into playlists and all that kind of stuff. I'm always shocked. Sometimes I'll see a band and I'm shocked 3,000 people will be showing up and they're, I don't even know who they are. And yeah, I'll go see them with a friend or something. Yeah. So it's always fascinating. I feel like a rambling idiot because it's just like I have no answers. I have no answers.
Well, yeah, so given all that, here we are talking about the fact that you've made a new album. With all that craziness in the background, why keep going?
Well, the pandemic was particularly harsh for me. We made this record, and then we wrote another record in when we started to be able to get back together in 21, 22. Basically wrote two records. When I say records, I mean like eight or nine songs. To be honest with you, I've talked to the rest of the band. We're probably just from now on are probably going to be putting out 5 to 7 song records, like basically EPs. I just don't think people consume it the way. I don't care if I'm the biggest band in the world. I think a 20-minute playlist of what you got new is plenty these days. I don't think you need to fuck off and come up with a 10-song masterpiece. I think if a band right now, if management, MGMT put out a 5-song EP and they had 5 songs, that's all I need. Yeah, it's like, I just don't think people, the way people listen to music, it's not really needed anymore. So anyways, yeah, we wrote, and then through a set of circumstances, just the everybody dying on my end, and then just pandemic crap, and then we had some logistical things where my guitar player moved away for a bit. And then, yeah, we finally got back to one. But yeah, I think the pandemic really was like a curveball for all of us. And I think also with the band, my bass player and my drummer are professional, like session guys. They go out and they make a living from music. And the rest of the band are just in the band, like myself, my keyboard player, Justin, who's basically right now the band is just Justin and myself basically writing most of the stuff. And then we bring the band in. Yeah, I think there was just a lot of like musicians that are like, can we ever make money in this business again? Like, there's just a lot of that. And so, anyways, long story short, we're back to one. And yeah, I'm going to stay delusional and keep making records like an idiot. So, yeah, that's my answer. Figure out how to make records. And to be honest, I'm getting better at it. And I've had about now, I have about 4 records written. So, there's a lot of material. And when you get to a point where you really know what you're doing, that's really when you want to strike. And for me, I think we'll stay a studio band, and if 1,000 people in Wichita want to see us, then we'll make some phone calls and we'll come out there. But I think touring is complete idiocy until a bunch of people want to see you. So for me, I'd rather just be a studio band, and if a bunch of people want to see you, then we'll make some phone calls and figure out how to do that. But I think personally, me, I'd rather be making music. You can't playing it live is exhilarating, and it's probably the only way maybe I'll ever make any money from it. But I don't know. There's something about continually going down the rabbit hole of recording, basically seeing how far down the rabbit hole you can go.
So I think you've kind of you mentioned, for instance, and I never want to rely too heavily on a press release or anything, but you mentioned being in a tumultuous time, and then of course the pandemic. Now, I was having this conversation with somebody this morning. I feel like now maybe we're really starting to see some of what really happened with the pandemic in terms of like changes in the culture and changes in ourselves.
You mean the wave has settled basically, like the wave went
Yeah.
out? Yeah, I think that's true. I think in the last year, yeah, people there, there's elements of what I hear from people coming back to work. I live in New York City and I can paint a pretty good picture of it from talking to a lot of people in the business that a lot of places are doing Tuesday to Thursday and then people can work from home Monday, Friday. There's a lot of businesses like that. But then now there's a lot of them are like, well, fuck that. You got to come back. We need you. And I understand that. Like, if you're having to train somebody or work with somebody and they're not next to you 5 days a week, I get it. I think it's 100%, especially in the creative. I think a lot of it had to do talking to mothers, people, the mothers I know. The half a week working from home really made being a mother a lot easier. So I think what the pandemic did, not so much for men, but for women, allowed them to realize, oh, I can be a professional and have a little more balance with raising kids if I could work from home even one day a week. So I think that from what I'm hearing from some of the mothers I know, that's the biggest game changer. But again, you have to have a job that allows that. And depending on your job, if you're a state trooper, you can't stay at home,
Yeah.
So yeah, there's just I don't really know. I will say with the music business, I think everybody came out and wanted to tour again. And then from what I'm hearing, a lot of people that started touring, they realized it's gotten so expensive that it's really difficult to do unless you're really big. I don't want to say top 1%, but you have to be. It just costs a lot more now. And inflation's coming down, but I think inflation had a big issue. And I think also, like, I don't know if it's completely true, but yeah, you just have to have a lot of startup money to make it work in the music business, or find a way to get money or come for money. So to be able to do it, you have to get lucky. And I think there's tons of artists out there that have record deals and are making a living, and they're killing it. And some that they're extremely lucky. I think that a lot of that was, pre-pandemic, but now I think it's just kind of a new era. And I think the labels in business, they're just trying to figure out a system that works. And I don't know. I've known nothing about it. I don't know what kind of system they have. I remember talking to a guy that ran a record label that was looking at us, and he said he worked for a big label underneath the major. And he said, I have a he's he was given a basic instructions. You have 60 40. So if 60% of your acts make money and 40% don't, you get to keep your job. That's all they told him. So, he's got to be risky enough and do little enough to try not to get fired. So that was fascinating. I do think, there's people out there that want to help and love music, just like you want to be involved in music. And I think if you make good music, at least my first time around, some people eventually will help. When that is, I have no idea, but there are people out there that love music, and I'm not saying they're going to write you a check, but they want to help. Everybody, I think also the other difference since the pandemic in the last 5 years is with social media, everybody wants to be famous. I think like 20 years ago, you had to learn how to play, you had to learn how to write a song, you had to learn how to perform, and you had to be really good. You can be mediocre and have 3 million Instagram followers and probably get a record deal. So it's just a different, the quality level that is needed. I don't think there's that kind of line in the sand. Yeah, the cr cream rises to the top eventually, but I just think there's just a lot of competition. Yeah, I don't know how you break through all this. It's like infinite, the amount of people that want to be making music. I don't know how the amount of stuff you get sent, the amount of press releases. I can't imagine. Like it's got to be really, it's crazy.
Oh, it's on some, it's this funny thing because people will say to me, well, that must be great that you get to sit around and listen to music all day. And I'm like, I get to listen to music a very minimal amount, like really listen to it, and it is, a lot of it is like, I never want to be mean, I never want to be rude, but I can't possibly keep up with every press release, and I can't possibly listen to every promo,
Yeah, if you were an A&R guy, you'd probably, like me, you would listen to the first two songs you were sent, and if you didn't like them, you're moving on. Or maybe just 30 seconds of a song. I think a lot of that, I think a lot of it has to do with not listening to music, is how many plays do you have? And can we take what you've built, and if we invest money, we'll make more together. I think that's basically what the music industry is offering you now. And the only guarantee, I think, if you become a touring act, I think that's really the only way you could wrap your brain around what you can control, is like, if you have a fan base that'll come see you live consistently, then that's something you can easily wrap your brain around. You kill it live. And yeah, I think that's as good as it gets.
So I wondered if, on some level, you made this record because you kind of, without sounding cliche, like you had to express these things that you were feeling and the observations.
Yeah, I mean, the music industry is the music, being a songwriter and wanting to do this has destroyed most of my life. I mean, it's a complete disease. I poured all my money into it. It's all I think about. It's a cavernous fuck all of a hole that you just go down and go down and go down, and because you have to and you love it. I've had some moments where, I'm involved and I put music out. I try to align myself and get help from people. I've been, signed before, and all that. But like, yeah, it's pretty horrifying, and you don't know why you're doing it, but you have to do it. I think, like, my thing is a band. I just really sent a quote to my publicist about this. Like, my personal opinion is if I made music by myself and did all the drum beats and all the keyboards and all this shit, it would be terrible. I've been working with the same people, and over the years, when you write songs with the same people, you get really good at it, and they understand what to do, and vice versa. And that's really where the magic is. And that's why some bands are great, is because they've been writing songs together for a long time. So when your songwriter brings in an amazing song, an amazing arrangement happens because the band has a thing. And this last record's a perfect example of like a band that's been playing together a while and knew how to do songcraft. Did we need to make an 11 song record these days? Probably not. That's just what we happened to do. I don't know how we came up with that, but it was just what we had together at that time. But yeah, I think anybody that does music is doing it for their own selfish reasons. And then if you're lucky enough that people listen, then shit, fuck. But yeah, I think it's crazy because you'll see people that are so talented, and I have a I know people that are they're crazy talented, but maybe they didn't pick the right things, or they make really bad decisions, or they didn't have good luck. I really don't have any good answers for it, but they still love doing it. I do have the musician friends I know, the ones that are making a living, like they found a system that works for them, and they figure out how to make a living. I don't You can't like make a ton of money as a musician, but you can get lucky. Maybe you get in a touring act of a big artist and you get to go on some good tours, but it's not a lot of money. And so they just figure out a way to kind of keep doing it. So I think being a musician now is really difficult. And that's probably why they're disappearing, is because it's unless you're with a touring act or you're playing locally as live music venues. I'm not saying there's becoming less of them, but it's just more difficult to make a living. And you really have to have a couple acts that you're able to make a living off of. So, yeah, being a musician these days compared to maybe 25 years ago is a lot more difficult. And I think when I started out, you could be a songwriter and make a living. And there's some of that these days, but it's not what it was years ago. So, I don't have any good examples. The people that I know that are making a lot of money, it's like they're in big acts and it just went their way. And then a bunch of them are just happen to be the bass player in the band, or whatever. And it just they picked the right horse, I guess. I don't really know. I've seen bands that I thought were going to be the biggest bands in the world, and they just beat each other up and quit. There's one band early on, and like I remember when I first moved to the city in like 2005 or 4, I was like, these guys are going to be like the next Pink Floyd. But like I was like, this is it. These guys are unbelievable. They made one record, and then they beat each other up, and that was that. And so it's like, yeah, you don't really know. But anyways, yeah, M music bad ruins lives. But here I am.
Yeah, it is that, and it's hard sometimes too, right, to explain to people who aren't in it. I'm sure you've had this. People are like, you could do something else, and it's kind of like, nah, you can't,
Well, to map my world out, I made a lot of poor decisions early. So I went to college and I lived in London for a couple years. And then I moved to the city when I was like 22, 23. And then I worked in the film business. And all the people that worked in the film business are now running Hollywood. So probably if I stayed in the film business, I'd be running a studio or something. But anyways, I did that for a while. And then my dumbass decided to pick up a guitar. Right when, New York City in like 2004, 2003 was like the biggest music capital of the world. And yeah, and then I stupidly picked up the guitar then and then started to learn how to play guitar. And then I was like, I can't join a band if I can't even like figure out how to play or write a song. Like being a front man and not knowing a chord is just, I could probably do it, but I don't, Anyways, I fucking worked in the restaurant business and learned how to play guitar. And then, like, the hard work thing worked. Like, I didn't play live till I was 30. 30 years old. I played my first band show at Arlene's Grocery when I was 30. And then, like, maybe a year later or a year and a half later, we got a record deal. And that was like around the clock hard work of like learning how to write songs, recruiting band members. And then I got lucky. I recruited like all these guys from like that went to music school, and they were all freaks, like musical freaks. And then like we made a record, and like, you know, we got the tour and got a good review in Pitchfork, and then that band broke up. But my point is like the hard work thing worked. And then yeah, when you're after that, you know, if I was a normal guy, I'd be 23, but I was 33 when, or 34 when my, 34 or 35 when my band broke up. And then like I'm starting again with Imaginary People. And then to even give you some color on that, yeah, we put out a couple records, and then right before the pandemic, a big indie label was gonna sign us, and then the pandemic happened. And then so that's here I am. So that was like two putting out two records, and then somebody might want to sign us, and you know, it'd be comical because that record probably would have come out during the pandemic. But anyways, yeah, that's pretty much my storyline. I don't know why I waited so long. I think nobody played music in my town, you know. And then when you get to the city, I was like, all right, I'm gonna start doing this. And it was kind of crazy because that, you know, that was when New York was the biggest, that New York was it for bands. I mean, it was everything. Strokes, Interpol, Stella Star. Who else is bad? My buddy's band, Elephant, were great. Fuck, who else is back then? I'm trying to think. The Ambulance LTD, The Rapture, else, I guess LCD Sound System. Yeah, it's just, it was like endless. Endless. So, anyways, yeah, that's kind of my arc as a idiot pursuing the I know I sound like an asshole, but yeah.
Well, I'll close out on this. You know, you and I are talking about this record, and the record's not quite out yet, and it's probably been done for quite some time, and you've lived with this for a long time. Do you get a, I don't know, not, anxiety isn't the right word, but is there, do you have anticipation, like right before the record comes out, like wondering what people are going
Yeah.
to think?
No, I mean, you see it as when you the singles, we put out a few singles and you can see some, we're small. So, you know, if like one song suddenly got 10 million plays, like, well, somebody's really liking it. And this record might, you know, blow up. But yeah, I think it, a lot would have to happen for me to like raise expectations. But no, you don't know if anybody's going to like it. You can tell like the first few songs, yeah, people were, for the limited amount of like horsepower that I have to get it out there, you know, I'm not on a label. Yeah, people are digging it, but you, I think if I were to put out another three records, then I think I would know in the next couple of years if I keep putting out music, that would be the better barometer of like having expectations of like people liking it. I think if you're on a, if you're a bigger artist and you have putting something out and you're wondering if people, I think that's probably a tangible thing you can wrap your brain around, because it probably is contingent on whether more people will come to your shows or not. I mean, I've stood there with the lead singer of a band at a giant venue and being like, the guy was literally, he's like, I wish, he's like, I guess we just can't get any bigger than this, these places. Like he's on his like fifth record. He's like, I guess this is it for us. So I can understand from a band that's already been out there, every time they put out music, they're wondering if they might get a leg up. Yeah, who knows? I think, yeah, you be selfish and make the music you want to make, and then, you know, an audience will eventually find you or not. But I think that's the best approach, yeah.
You've been listening to a conversation with Dylan Von Wagner of the New York City-based group Imaginary People. They released their third album, Alibi, on September 12th. You can learn more about the band at their official website, imaginarypeoplenyc.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. And it's always a great time to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.